Pete, do you have one to bring us in now?
I don't. The best thing I was going to do is like, you are listening to Brutal Dudes. I was going to try to do the Mario thing, but I can't like... I was like, I was trying to fucking workshop it in my head. I was like, I can't do it.
Like, can't do it.
I feel like that's it. I feel like that's the intro. Sure.
It's a good intro.
Just my stumbling and failure. Although, like, if you think about it, Mario and Luigi are like the original Brutal Dudes.
I mean, I guess. Are they brutal? Can they be brutal?
Did they have a podcast?
They started this.
Yeah.
They fucking jumped on the heads of their enemies. Like, what's more brutal than that? Genghis Khan? Yeah. Fuck you. Julius Caesar? Dude. Eat my dick. Napoleon Bonaparte? Sacre bleu. Like, no. None of them jumped on the heads of their enemies. So fuck Mario, you know, Luigi. Napoleon OG didn't brutal
jump
dudes.
On the head of his enemies, dude. Maybe he went right from Elba right on top of some fucking Goomba that he was trying to fend off. And in this case, it's not some fucking armless mushroom wandering around. It was an actual Goomba from Italy.
This is Petey Page.
I am Mike.
J-Mac.
Brutal Dudes.
We got a special guest today and we're really pumped about. Please introduce yourself, sir.
Yo, my name is Justin. I am the owner of Respawn Records, where we take video game soundtracks, license them, and do either new creations, like a metal version, ska, you know, whatever genre, or do the actual soundtrack. So, yeah, we do a lot of fun stuff. already stumbling over my words.
It's all right, man. So how we came about discovering this was obviously too many games this year, but I bought your vinyl record of Battletoads, which is called Metaltoads. Everybody out there needs to find a copy of this because this fucking record is awesome. Like, pumped me up so hard. I could have gone through a wall. I could have rode on a jet ski with my frog feet kicked down into the back every time I jumped. That's how hyped I got over this album. It was awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely a badass album. I was just talking to the guy that you know, redid that album in that kind of like heavy rock metal style, working on a Mortal Kombat album with him now. So,
oh, so yeah. Fucking cool. Oh, man.
He did Earthworm Jim already, and we have that. But, yeah, now we're doing Mortal Kombat.
So I want to talk more about the basis behind this and how you got into it. But I'm really excited to ask you this question. Can we do an album for you?
Yeah. What do you mean? Like,
so Mike's a musician and Pete's a musician. So we were thinking, like, maybe, I don't know if anybody did the Ninja Turtles yet.
So one album I have been wanting to do for so long is, like, Turtles in Time.
Yeah. I was thinking that, or, like, and like, add in maybe, like, as a bonus, the first Turtles game for NES. Because those songs are still stuck in my head.
That game still makes me mad.
Yeah.
Like, I still, like, I wake up angry. Like, I'm rage quitting in my sleep for the underwater stage.
Yes. See, I'm that sick type of person that water levels were always my favorite. Didn't care how hard they were. I just always loved them.
That level, I liked them, but they always fucked me up. The Sonic one, too. Remember when you run out of air?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gasping for air. Oh, terrible. And then Banjo-Kazooie racing against that shark. Yeah.
Tomb Raider. Remember when you have to go underwater in Tomb Raider? And she does that weird, awkward fucking... That swim where it's like nobody actually swims that way, like, even in England.
Yeah.
Man, how do people swim in England?
I don't know, but it ain't like that. They look like those old school 30s divers with their fucking candy stripe onesies that are about to dive in a pool, like the guy on the top of the Mousetrap game.
Is it weird? Wait a minute, are you saying it's weird that I wear a candy stripe onesie?
No, dude.
How do you take showers?
You dress like Waldo and hope no one can find you in the shower.
So I guess that brings up a good place to jump into. Like, how do you link up with the artists who are doing these records?
So a lot of the time, especially when I started the label back in 2019, I really just would think, okay, you know, what kind of soundtrack, like what game do I want to personally work with? And the very first album that, you know, I produced with the label was a Vector Man album done by the same guy that did the Battletoads, the Metaltoads album. And I really just get, you know, the idea, okay, I want to do Vector Man, or I want to do Banjo Kazooie, but let's do like a ska version or something. You know, I just get, I don't know, I just get these ideas, and then if it's not the official soundtrack, I will, you know, go scouting different areas, you know, Bandcamp, YouTube, SoundCloud, wherever, to see if there already exists like an album where somebody did covers for that game. And if there is, and it sounds, you know, like something that, you know, I can get behind, I'll just directly reach out to them, see if they're interested in, you know, licensing their, you know, arrangements, their versions of it to me for, you know, a limited press of vinyl. So then after that, you know, once that's confirmed, I have to actually get licenses from the actual copyright owners. So yeah, it's really not as hard as it seems, but starting out trying to get, you know, these connections with different, you know, companies is definitely something that takes a little bit of time.
Now, has there been, and if you don't want to say the name of it, that's fine, but has there been a game you just haven't been able to get the license for that you attempted to?
Yeah, there's been a couple of Konami games, but main reasons are because they're either already working with somebody else to do the same thing that I'm trying to reach out to them for. So, you know, no hard feelings there. You know, I get it. But most of the time, you know, there's not really much issue. They just, you know, the dollar, however much money you're willing to throw at them, usually is the deciding factor.
I have heard that Konami is very, like, protective, I guess would be the word, of its licenses. Like, they very like to, they don't really like to, let anybody kind of use them. I'm a big Castlevania fan, and I know that, like, to try to find some of that music, or even, like, you know, the hopes of a brand new, or even a remake of a Castlevania game is, like, it's never happening. I don't want to say it's never happening, but it, like, Konami's so much, like, they're, like, they'd, like, hold on to that, like, hoard it, and they hold on to it because they don't want anything, they don't want anybody to, like, touch it, it seems like. So that seems understandable to me.
Yeah, but there is, you know, like, we did one Castlevania album, but
oh, sick.
It wasn't like the original soundtrack, it was like a cover album. So we took Castlevania 3 and remade it using Sega Genesis software, so that, you know, it's a new creation, and it's literally just like taking sound fonts from Genesis. And yeah, I mean, like, if Castlevania 3 was made for the Genesis, this is what it would sound like, because it's the actual software used to make this album. But we did also a metal album of Dracula X that hasn't come out yet. And the reason we're able to do those is because, since it's not the original soundtrack, there's actually laws in place that support people like me trying to do, like, creative works, that if they've already kind of got, like, their like, first dibs, let's say, they've released it on physical media, they've made their money, if I reach out to get a, you know, what's called a compulsory mechanical license, they actually can't say no. Wow. Yeah. So there's definitely things that work in favor of, you know, of what I'm trying to do. As long as they've already got their first dibs, they can't say no to me. As long as I pay them the royalty fees and such. Yeah.
Nice. Is that fall? Does that like fall under fair use? Is that part of that whole thing? Is it like a subset of it or?
So I'm definitely not a lawyer. I have lawyers, but so basically it's kind of like that. It's the compulsory mechanical license is in place to promote creativity. So, you know, it's, I guess it's kind of like a fair use kind of thing because it makes it so if somebody wants to make a creative rendition or parody or whatever you want to call it, I mean, like Robot Chicken, that TV show, they've done parodies of everybody. They've been sued so many times, but they win all the time because parody. But in this kind of sense, yeah, just doing a creative rendition of something that they've already profited from, it's just a great thing. I'm happy there's laws like this in place.
Oh yeah, 100%. I totally agree with you. I think that if people want to, like, you know, alter something like that or be able to, like, you know, use it and maybe tweak on it, it makes it so that, like, it's, there's not like stagnation. It like you said, it fosters creativity, and I think that that's a welcome thing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Now, when you were first forming the label, was Vector Man what you had in mind to start with, or did it just kind of land in your lap that was the first one?
So it wasn't my first like thought to do Vector Man. The first album I wanted to do, I was reaching out to the composer and the people that were trying to bring the game back in an HD form on Kickstarter, which never happened, but it was for the game Booger Man.
Oh.
Yeah. So Booger Man, you know, that game for my childhood was, you know, was awesome. And I thought there could be some crazy, you know, really cool things we could do with, like, the vinyl color, you know. It, like, I do a lot of liquid-filled stuff, so we could do, like, a snot-filled, like, album. Like, I don't know. I just... And that soundtrack is actually, like, really good. So, yeah, Booger Man was my first idea. But then Vector Man, I mean, I already knew that I could do Vector Man, like, legally. So I kind of just jumped into it with that to see how, you know, how things would go. And it went very well. So immediately after Vector Man, I was able to get the license for Glover for N64. And we did that. Yeah. So that was our second album. But
I just saw a commercial for Glover on an old episode of Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
I've been watching all the Raws from beginning to end, and I'm in like 99-98 era, and they had a commercial. They're like, it's brought to you by Glover for N64, and I'm like, I remember that game.
Yeah, Glover, you might be seeing some commercials and stuff for him again on you know, modern shows and everything. He's making a comeback.
Nice.
That's wild to me, like, that Glover would be making a comeback. Like, that's a game that, like, I never got to play it. I was like, ooh, I really want this. As a kid, I really wanted to get it, and never got it. But, like, I've watched YouTubers and, like, old, like, people who play, like, old school video games, like, go back to it, and they're like, man, this game is rough.
Yeah, it's not the best game, but that nostalgia factor for me personally is just, it's so overflowing that I just had to get connected with it. And I know there's a potential for the unfinished Glover 2 to be coming also.
Ooh,
that's rad.
But I don't have anything to do with that. I just know, I mean, that's open, you know, that's not like secret information. They've posted about it, but yeah.
Now, you've mentioned the vinyl releases as far as like liquid and different colors and things. When you're choosing these projects, do you kind of already have the packaging in mind, or is that something that comes afterwards?
So I guess it's a mix, because sometimes before I'll even start an album, like get the music and everything going, I'll already have artwork made, just to get a feel for how this album's like cover and everything is gonna look. So like we did Zombies Ate My Neighbors, you know, like a metal version by Lame Genie. That artwork was done 2 years before the album even came out. And also we just released yesterday, we called it R-Wing Odyssey. It's a Star Fox 64 prog metal album. That artwork was all done almost 3 years ago. And the album, the music just got finished like 2-3 months ago. So it's like, you know, it could go either way. Sometimes, you know, sometimes I have to have the music, listen to the soundtrack a few times, like, and just really get a feel of like what direction I want to go. But sometimes the art just hits me first and I just roll with it.
Now, in addition to, you know, obviously the vinyl, I know that Metal Toads is available for streaming. Is streaming ever difficult to set up as far as the licensing?
So for streaming, you know, the whole digital route, I don't do any of that. Occasionally we'll have like digital download codes in the packaging with the vinyl, but for the most part, I like to, you know, go a little above in supporting the artists that I work with by having links on all the product pages that will bring people to where they can download it or, you know, purchase it digital from the actual artists. I like to try to funnel as much, you know, sales and stuff to them as possible, just because, you know, I'm really interested in the physical side of things. So when it comes to the streaming, the digital, I let them handle all of that. I don't know. I never really, I am honestly looking into a little bit of digital releases soon, but you know, since for the past almost 4 years, it's just been physical media that I work with.
Now, is that a personal preference for you as well? Do you prefer listening to physical media?
Yeah, I mean, there's just something about putting a record down and dropping the needle and having, you know, it's never going to be as perfect as of a format as digital. You know, it's just the nature of it. But something about just having this physical like record in my hands, putting it on a turntable and just dropping the needle. Yeah, I can select what track I want. It's a little bit harder on a record, but almost being encouraged to listen to an album from start to finish, just, I don't know, there's just something special about it. I just enjoy it a lot. But I mean, digital, like, I listen to almost all the albums that we've done physical stuff for digital, because, you know, even though I've paid them licensing for physical, I still like to support them on their, you know, in every way possible. But a lot of the albums are just available for free, whether it's like YouTube or Bandcamp or whatever. So, you know, I'll be diving into digital a little bit more pretty soon, but for the most part, it's going to be just vinyl, starting to do some CDs, and might even dabble in some cassettes.
Cassettes are making a comeback, I think.
Yeah, cassettes are actually doing pretty good from what I see.
Love it.
I'm a cassette guy, so I'm definitely excited to hear that.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, I gotta try it.
I'm a vinyl guy. Like, you're talking to, so I mean, growing up, my dad collected vinyl. He has over 3,000 like 33s in his collection. He's got every Beatles album in multiple copies and like the different pressings. Like he's that guy. And like, it's just really cool to see modern vinyl making so much of a comeback, because, you know, for a while, like I have distinct memories of going to like garage sales with my dad and buying, like, he could get like a Clapton album for 50 cents. And now, like, good fucking luck. But at the same time, like, he still has it. He has them all. And like, I agree with you. It's an amazing media. It's amazing to put the needle down, either at the groove that you think is going to be the right spot to start the track that you want to listen to.
Yeah. Hit or miss.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just put it on the first and let it roll. Like, just do it, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I just think of it as a more like intimate listening experience. So
100%. I would agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where I'm at. I'm a vinyl head.
Now, do you get, I assume you get a lot of emails from fans requesting specific albums. Has anything like that ever led to an actual release?
Yeah. Honestly, if you want to hear probably the most crazy crazy situation of that was, I had a customer reach out a little over 2 years ago saying that him and his girlfriend are like avid Final Fantasy lovers. Like, they play Final Fantasy like together all the time. He's the Kefka, you know, she's the Terra, and they work together even though they probably shouldn't. And he wanted to see if he could somehow have me send her like some kind of message or like do like an interview with a composer, Daniel Collins. He goes by TPR, and because she listened to one of his albums called World of Ruin for like every day, she would listen to this album. And I kind of brought it up to him. I'm like, how would you feel if we went, you know, a little bit beyond that expectation? Let's make an actual album. Let's do a full-blown vinyl album of that soundtrack she listens to every day. You'll work with me on it. We'll come up with the artwork together, get everything going. And, you know, it was probably a year of a project that I was working with this guy on. And when the album was finally done, I sent him a couple copies, and he set up like this dinner and everything and had a turntable there and asked if she could go, you know, turn it on so that they could have music while they ate. And she saw what album it was. She started like crying. She's like, who produced this? Who put this out? And he started telling her, and then he got down and he proposed to her with that album.
Oh, Jesus, that's awesome.
And she said yes. And now they are literally my wife and I's best friends. So it went from somebody that was a customer to, you know, being part of their proposal and everything, and now literally hanging with them fairly regularly, you know, talking to them all the time. Yeah, that was definitely the most crazy scenario like that. But, you know, people do reach out recommending stuff all the time.
Very cool. So basically what you're saying, if people want to marry somebody, they have to reach out to you. They have to get all the
video. We'll make it happen.
You have to produce an entire album. Like, this is the only way to find happiness if you're a video game fan, is what you're saying.
Oh yeah. The only way you're going to get your girl to say yes is if you work with me so that I can help you out. Get you, you know, get her to say yes.
You guys heard it here. We're laying this out for you. This is the path to happiness that you can only get listening to the Brutal Dudes podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dude. So like I said, that's an awesome story, dude. That's so cool. Like, I'm telling you, when we walked by, I remember because it wasn't that long ago, but like when me and Pete walked
like
by,
I remember last week.
When me and Pete walked by, I was like, my exact response was, holy fuck, dude, Battletoads? That's awesome. I love that fucking game.
I legit remember you saying that.
Yeah, because I was like, oh my God, I fucking love this game. It's such an underrated game. Like, even to this day, like, you could do, like, but the coolest thing that I saw, like, as far as their media, is if you watch on Ready Player One, there's scenes where they do the big, like, everybody has their avatar.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Battletoads are in those scenes.
Yeah, that scene is literally what made that my favorite movie for, like, a very long time. And it's definitely going to be in my top three for a long time, because that scene that you're talking about, just the fact that I saw the Battletoads in there was just, it blew my mind. I'm like, I love all the references already, but like to see that was something else.
It was right. It was so like, it was so out of the blue. Like I paused. I was pausing parts of the movie to see, like, you know, what the references were and what that stuff is. But then when I saw it, I was like, get the fuck out of here. And I paused it and rewound it. And I'm like, holy shit, dude, the Battletoads are in this movie. And my little sister was like, what the fuck are the Battletoads? And I'm like, it's legitimately the greatest game that's ever been made. It's so good.
Do you think maybe you failed as a brother because she doesn't know what Battletoads are?
No, I don't, because unfortunately, my little sister, I was able to get her, I was able to influence her in mostly everything.
Okay.
The one thing that I was never able to accomplish, just because I don't think it's her thing, is video games. Like, she's very, very much, and I don't know if this is like a female thing or what, but like, she very much, like, she'll have three games that she plays that she's good at. Sucks at everything else. Like, the worst. She, first-person shooters, she's fucking terrible. And not only is she terrible, but she inherited my anger. So she, like, really gets frustrated and throws controllers and shit. Like, she's that person when she can't do the game. She's like, I fucking hate this. And she'll just throw the controller.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing that she's never played Battletoads then.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Now, put Sneak King, which is the Burger King game that they gave out for free for a while for Xbox, kills it. Loves that game. Like, wow. Sneak King, but not first-person shooters. I don't get it, but she...
So she likes product placement games.
Well,
I'm a huge defender of Yo-Noid.
Yo-Noid was a good game.
Nice.
But the other thing that she's good at is she's a good... Because I feel like, again, not to get too philosophical, I feel like this is an underrated role in video game fandom. She's a better navigator than she is a player. So, like, if I were playing a role-playing, like, if I were playing Resident Evil, she could sit next to me and be like, and she'd be like, you missed that. And I'd be like, missed what? She's like, look in the corner. And there would be, like, a little clue thing, like a piece of wallpaper they have to peel down and find the secret. And I wouldn't have noticed it, and I would have spun my wheels. So she was better at that always, or like figuring out riddles to get to like secret characters, like trying to find out like how to unlock a secret guy. Like, because of her, I found Fred Durst in SmackDown Know Your Role or Shut Your Mouth or whatever it was. I unlocked Fred Durst.
Nice.
I had no idea he was even in the game. And she's like, oh, you should just try and beat this with The Undertaker. He's the most powerful. I think it was you had to beat a slobber knocker match with The Undertaker, which was like, just, you have to beat a certain amount of guys. They just keep randomly coming. And she's like, his power builds up so fast. You can hit your finisher like every two guys if you play your cards right. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I did it. And then they're like, you've unlocked Fred Durst. And I was like, what?
I don't know why when you first said that. And I was like, in real life? When you were like,
yeah, right.
You're like, because of her, we unlocked Fred Durst.
Fred Durst comes out like the fucking... Captain N, he comes the other way, and then I unleash his terror on the world. I always said that should be a really cool game.
Limp Bizkit, the game?
No, New Metal.
The Chocolate Starfish Strikes Back.
new Metal Renaissance, you can call it, and it's like the lead singer is Stained, the lead singer of fucking Seven Dust, the guitar player from fucking Korn, they all just band together like Revolution X for Aerosmith's game, and they have to like save the world.
Oh my God. I would give anything for a Revolution X remake that's just Limp Bizkit.
Revolution Starfish.
Yeah.
Yeah, hot dog flavored water,
dude. That would be a, that's a great game. But yeah, anyway, but that's so, but no, like, she's into pro wrestling, she's into metal. We're going to see Metallica in a couple weeks.
Nice.
She, and this is the second time we've seen them. When we're at metal shows, Pete will vouch for this because she's seen it. If people get on her nerves, she has really long hair, so she gets it to the point where she can whip it around and hit people in the face with it. I'm very proud with the influences that I've had. However, that was never something that we could accomplish, was to get her really good at video games. But yeah, everything else is pretty cool. And like I said, she's a really good navigator for like puzzle games that you got to figure stuff out. I, like, cause I'm good, but like sometimes I don't pay attention cause I'm busy shooting like, you know, giant fucking plant creatures that are, you know, trying to play the piano to sue the fucking, a fucking little Shop of Horrors plant that's attacking me, while she'll notice written on the wall is a fucking sentence that'll help me, you know, beat somebody 3 weeks later.
All I know is if I can't unlock Fred Durst in the new Mortal Kombat, I'm gonna be really disappointed.
Why? You wonder why he hasn't been cameoed in more shit.
Yeah,
he's
got to be DLC.
And honestly, I think they should remake Revolution X with the new Metal X. Revolution Starfish that we're working on here should be Final Fantasy VII fight engine, where you have turn-based fighting.
I could try to do like a chocolate starfish instrumental album with mixtures of game soundtracks throughout, blend them.
Thing.
I don't know.
A fucking genius idea.
Revolution Starfish is happening.
I love this brainstorming session that we're having right now. This is great. Or like Rampage, but like with big titty porn stars. Like, that's the idea. Like, they can use their like,
and that Fred Durst could be in that too.
Why not?
He's a versatile character.
They could eat Fred Durst like while he's in the shower. Like in that one scene, they pull him out of the shower and he's like, oh no. And then they put him and then they eat him. Yeah. I love it. This is where video games should go.
Oh, it's happening.
All Limp Bizkit soundtracks to video games.
Limp Bizkit versus Stained. It's like the fucking it's like fucking Killer Instinct, but it's like fucking Limp Bizkit and Stained.
I would love a fighting game that was just the new metal.
Did you ever play Def Jam Vendetta?
Yes.
I love that game.
Fred Durst isn't in it.
No. And you think he would be because he made that song with Method Man.
If Fred's not in it, I'm not playing it.
Right? I think that's where most wrestling games miss the mark. But most games in general, like one of the things I always wanted about Need for Speed, honestly, was like unlockable Fred pop Durst. Culture cars. Well, I mean, Fred Durst too. He could be a car. He's like in the movie, like car. Pixar cars.
Oh my god,
Fred Durst. What would it be? It would be a fucking Toyota Celica, 1993.
Whatever it is, it's red
with a big Phillies fucking sign on it. A Celica or a fucking a Toyota Camry from fucking 91.
One door is a different color.
The tape player is, the chocolate stuff is just stuck in the tape player. You can't get it out, so it just plays. That's what it plays the whole time.
The objective of the game is to somehow get Chocolate Starfish to stop playing.
But like that, but I always said, like, wouldn't it be cool in Need for Speed if you could unlock the DeLorean? That's like a playable car, or like Speed Racer's car, or the Dukes of Hazzard, like the General Lee, like. I know the licensing is probably ridiculous to try and get those cars in, but like, could you imagine how much more fun Need for Speed 3 would be if you could play it as the fucking DeLorean? That game would have a whole new level of fun. Because just
El Nino would not Need for Speed in like a decade or two.
Yeah, the third one was my favorite. The because it was Hot Pursuit, because you could be the cop too. But like, how cool would it be to like have RoboCop or the Blues Brothers car?
I haven't played Need for Speed since Underground, because that game was fucking rad.
Yeah, I think that was the one right after 3.
Where did Dub City fall?
Oh, what? Shit. No, I did play Dub City, but like that was like once your car could get like superpowers in Dub City, I was like, what is this? Like, it's like, yo, you got a base shockwave to slow your opponents down. I'm like, what? Like, it was taking its, I felt the game was taking itself kind of seriously. And then it's like, yo, you just unlocked a power. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like,
all you need is family. That's what you get. You get the power of family.
Corona appears.
Jesus.
Your car starts talking like Vin Diesel.
Yeah, that'd be crazy.
You were talking about Mortal Kombat cameos. They've which is kind of crazy to me, the new Mortal Kombat that's coming out, they've already spoiled the cameos. Like, it's gonna be like Homelander and Invincible and Omni-Man are confirmed, like, downloadable characters coming to the new Mortal Kombat.
We just need Fred Durst.
Yeah, dude,
to round out the
Fred Durst, the lead singer for Puddle of Mud. He could sing that terrible Nirvana cover that he did.
Puddle of Mud, man.
That's
a song. You're bringing up some good memories for me right now.
Fucking, you get Linkin Park on there. Yeah, they could all be Linkin Park, Chris Cornell.
I just thought of the darkest joke, and I can't.
Chris Cornell. I'm
not gonna say it.
Chris Cornell, Scott, and the lead singer from Chester, from fucking Linkin Park.
You talking
they
about
could all be Revenants in Mortal Kombat, like, as part of the army?
Okay. Was that the joke, Mike?
It was in that direction.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Oh, no.
That was the... No, yeah, no lie, that
you can Chester's... You Kurt Cobain and shoot through your own chest into the guy you're fighting.
Chester's death was like, when it happened, like, I told my wife, and she was like, what? And she literally, like started crying a little bit. I was like, oh, babe. And she's like, I need a minute. And I was like, whoa. And I'm like, it's fascinating. You never really know, like, what celebrity is going to get you until, like, it happens. And it was like, yeah, that was a rough one. Chester was a rough one.
There's so many, like, there's so many rappers that died recently that just upset me. But, like, I remember it was like a trifecta. It was like Fife was first, Tribe, and then Blackalicious died. Gift of Gab, and then the guy from De La Soul just died, Dave. And I'm like, a fucking three of my favorite lyricists of all time just died, like, within a
Juice
year.
Juice WRLD.
Yeah. And
oh yeah,
MF Doom. I was like, dude, like, it's like the and I know they say this, but it's like the best ones are the ones that die first, and then it's like you're left with like fucking Flo Rida. And you're like, what the fuck is this, dude?
You're like, how is Soulja Boy still here?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yo, someone's gotta not let him make video games.
No.
See, I brought that back to video games, though, with Soulja Boy.
Yeah, 100%.
But it's like, oh, man. It's just very upsetting, because it's like, especially De La, like, I loved Dave from De La. Like, he was so good. And it just, like, but again, like, those should be now secret characters. Like, could you imagine Scott Weiland, like, in Mortal Kombat? Like, he just shoots heroin.
Just,
and just goes fucking crazy.
What?
He puts on his bondage shit and just goes crazy. Like, from the form, remember when he used to wear the fucking leather? He just whips his leather out and does some heroin and then fucking just jacks people up.
Jesus Christ,
the big microphone, you're blowing my mind, yo.
Oh my God. Like a scorpion sets people on fire, he gets a big microphone, like a megaphone, and he screams into it, and then his fucking face skin peels off. That's his finisher. That's a great one.
That's wild.
Yo. Yo. Oh, I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, right. How do you follow that up? Like,
that actually happens to be a lot.
I was just gonna say, like, he slurs whenever he yells at the people. But you're like, he pulls his kid out, starts shooting up.
he takes his brutality finisher is he brings out Eddie Vedder because they always compared him together. It used to piss him off. He shoots Eddie Vedder in the head and then he beats him up with Eddie Vedder. He just uses him as like a club.
Bro, I don't even know anymore.
Like, leave it on a sudden trail.
I feel way less bad about my suicide finishing move now. I feel like Jimmy is definitely topped it.
But what was the one we were talking about on here that we, not to get too completely off topic, but remember were we gonna do a sitcom dads one? Wasn't that what we were gonna do?
Oh, a sitcom dads fighting game?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that'd like, be fucking red.
Carl from Family Matters, Danny Tanner.
Yo, Danny Tanner would tear shit up. He'd let out all that anger from having to be happy all the time.
Well, he would also have the secret. You could do the code where, like, Uncle Jesse rides a motorcycle over them or plays the Beach Boys at the guys. Whatever the fuck you used to do.
Weirdo, oh, my God, the Beach Boys.
John Stamos. Stamos' secret move. His friendship finisher is he puts a pink bunny wallpaper all over the fucking character. That's great. I'm telling you, man. Video game gold right here. Urkel's finisher is he wraps you in a sleeping bag and he just does that fucking until your head explodes in the sleeping bag. And then he opens it up and it's like just fucking body parts. I'm telling you, I should have been a developer for Mortal Kombat.
What kills me is that, like, it also pisses me off that, like, in Mortal Kombat 10, you had the Xenomorph, you had Freddy Krueger, and you had Jason Voorhees, and I think that's the closest that we'll ever get to, like, a horror movie. Oh, and Leatherface. But that's the closest we'll get to, like, a horror movie character fighting game, because I think that would be just the fucking coolest thing. Oh, yeah, dude.
But I think you should structure it differently. So I think you should structure it like Double Dragon 3, where like each level you unlock a horror bad guy that you can then play as. So like level one is like, let's say it's like Dream World, right? So you fight, like, let's say you're Jason Voorhees or you're just some random guy that's made up like a horror guy, and you go in and you got to fight Freddy. And then if you beat Freddy, you can use Freddy later in the game as like a playable character. He becomes part of your stable.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get like, then you go to Jason, you go to Crystal Lake, you fight Jason, then you go to Leatherface, then you go to Chucky, then you go to...
But who do you start as then if you had to collect these fighters?
Fred Durst.
Yeah.
Fred Durst. You start as Fred Durst.
And then the final
boss. Bringing it full circle.
The final boss is Jared Leto. And then you just have to fucking, he can use all his shitty movie characters all at once to come at you. And also 30 Seconds to Mars music. He can use it all. Every shit show he's ever been a part of, he can do it. He can beat Scott Weiland because he does heroin and Requiem with a Dream. But he has one weakness.
What's that?
Making a good movie. So you hit him with an Oscar, bam, dead. If you find the secret Oscar throughout the game, you grab that Oscar and then you get to the final boss level and you can beat him. Otherwise, he's like Lu Bu in Dynasty Warriors. He's fucking impossible to beat one-on-one.
Yo, damn. Yo, I want to have conversations like this at least once a week. Like, like for real, you're dropping so many names that are just making me reminiscence in such a way, but like you're twisting it in such a way that it's amazing.
Thank you. I do my best. This is where I do my best work on this podcast.
I love it.
Or like you could do like a dead wrestlers one.
I was gonna say, like, on this podcast, the brain doesn't storm, it fucking tsunamis.
It's right. It fucking end of the world Morgan Freeman deep impacts. All I am is a speech before the wave hits.
I like the dead wrestlers, but they come back as zombies.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
And then each wrestler has zombie powers among also with their wrestler powers. Because there's so many, you could do a really cool wrestling game with just dead wrestlers. Bam Bam Bigelow. Literally comes back with the ability to manipulate fire.
Andre the Giant
manipulates alcohol and women.
Whoa, that's a little too real.
He could just, I drink under the table. That's Andre's voice. It's the best I can do.
I just like you followed up with, that's Andre's voice. Like, if anybody thought that's what I sounded like at this point in the show,
or
that
me.
Was my Andre the Giant.
Or our guest.
The Texas Tornado can take off his fake foot and beat you to shit with it because he had a fake foot when he was in WWF. Junkyard Dog can just be the Junkyard Dog because he's fucking awesome in general. But yeah, dude, there's a million of them. Like, that would be a great. These are all good fight game ideas. I mean, I don't know why they haven't been developed yet.
Right.
So whatever, missed opportunities, I guess. You win some, you lose some. We have a personal vendetta against Jared Leto, Justin, in case you were wondering. That's why I brought that up. We started Friends Against Leto. It's a group to stop him from douching up the rest of the world. He's done enough damage already, and we feel like we need to step in and grab this bull by the horns.
See, back in high school, I liked 30 Seconds of Mars, but then
you got taste in music.
Yeah, yeah.
Clearly, now you'd be like 30 Seconds to Where?
Yeah, no, I haven't listened to them in probably, I don't know, 17 years.
It was that one song they had that was like super popular and on the airwaves, and you're like, oh man, this is really cool, and then just like disappeared. Nothing ever happened.
Yeah, what was that called? I like Jizz or something?
I don't know.
Just started sending like dead animals to his like castmates.
Yeah. In Suicide Squad, he sent dead rats and shit.
What? I didn't know about this.
Yeah, he was sending like dead rats to like Margot Robbie and
Will Smith. And Will Smith was like, you're a fucking idiot. But, you know, then he slapped Chris Rock instead of Jared Leto. Total missed opportunity again. Wouldn't that be great if Will Smith... Wouldn't that be a whole different narrative if Will Smith with not only slapped Jared Leto, but, like, a white guy Joker? Like, wouldn't that... That whole narrative would be different. People would be like, damn, Will, way to go. Good job, dude.
You saved DC. Will Smith had the opportunity to save the DC universe.
And he just let it go.
We're living in the worst fucking timeline, I swear to God.
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you. Like, this multiverse, our part of the multiverse blows.
He could have killed the worst Joker, and instead he attacked and assaulted Pookie.
Yeah, Pookie. Like, how much better would that have been if you heard that? Think about it, though. Seriously. If there was like, oh, yeah, there was infighting on the set. Will Smith kicked the shit out of Jared Leto. You know how much more respect I would have for
I would be wearing a Not My Joker shirt right now.
I would wear a Will Smith shirt with a big fucking hand. Like a hand, like you fucking slapped him. Joker makeup on his fucking hand.